This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
Hello, everybody. This is Marshall Poe. I'm the founder and editor of the New Books Network. I've published several academic books, and one of the things I found frustrating is my inability to get them picked up in the press. There really is no PR service specifically oriented toward academic books. Recently, however, I had the opportunity to work with a PR firm in New York, RLM, on a book that I recently published. And I have to say, they did a remarkable job at a very low price. And this got me thinking. I wonder if the New Books Network and RLM could provide a service that would promote academic books. So the folks at RLM and I put our heads together and we came up with a package. It is specifically targeted toward people like you, people who write academic books. So if you're interested, you should go to the NBN website and click publish your book, and there you'll find some information about the services that the NBN and RLM are offering. What we really want to do is provide you with value for money. As far as we know, no such service exists. This is the first of its kind, and we really hope it is successful, and we hope that it helps you get the word out about your academic book.
Welcome to the New Books Network.
Hello, and welcome back to the New Books in Indian Religions podcast, a podcast channel here on the New Books Network. I'm your host, Dr. Rosh Balkaran, and today I have the pleasure of speaking with Dr. Elise Kokrosoma, who is the co-editor of a brand new Rutledge Hindu Studies series contribution called The Making of Contemporary Indian Philosophy, Krishnachandra Bhattacharya. Elise, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much for the conversation.
Yeah, my pleasure. Tell us a little bit about, my first question was going to be, so who was Krishnachandra Bhattacharya? And perhaps we'll get to that. But first, tell us about the backstory. How did this volume come together?
So the volume is a COVID story, basically. And while we were all in lockdown, so all means really is scholars, you know, from India, from America, from Europe, from Israel, all over the world. And we were all in lockdown and we were missing in conversation. And at the same time, we discovered the possibilities also of Zoom at that time and to meet all together and discuss Krishnachandra Bhattacharya on the internet. And so it was an online conference that was hosted by Tel Aviv University and organized by Daniel Rave, who is the co-editor of the book. And after the online conference, we wanted to basically continue the discussion. We felt, or at least for me, I felt that the debate had brought new insight into what I wanted to say. And we also felt that Krishnachandra Bhattacharya deserved to be, you know, spread all over the world. So we wanted to bring it to the public, to give the possibility to bring it to a larger audience and to bring more attention on contemporary Indian philosophy in general. And also to invite people to read more of Krishnachandra Bhattacharya, of course, that's all this book is about. So we invited also a few more friends to like participate in the discussion. So people joined us, like Arindam Chakrabarti, Stephen Kaplan, Mas Panjaj. And we also decided, and this is something I like a lot in the volume, to bring papers of Indian contemporary Indian philosophers themselves, like Daya Krishna, Kalyan Kumar Bakshi, and Dipika Chattopadhyaya, two of them, Daya Krishna and Dipika Chattopadhyaya, and no more, unfortunately. So to reproduce their articles, giants of contemporary Indian philosophy and of Krishnachandra Bhattacharya. So it's an online, written, and republished kind of a mixed volume that began all in COVID and came after COVID.
I have to comment on that process. I love that. I love that the pandemic situation was rendered useful and productive, and particularly insofar as venturing out into the online medium and discovering the potential power thereof and the possibilities thereof, I found myself strangely teaching and consulting on Zoom from my home office since 2017. So when 2020 came along, I'm like, oh, I'm not there. It's not as lonely as it was. But
I was not used to it, but I discovered the closeness. Suddenly we were all close to each other.
Exactly. I really went into on it. I don't know. So it must be some intuition or some self-punishment or destiny's will. I have no idea. But I was really intrigued by online education, but I'd never taken an online course. And really, I was skeptical. I was seriously skeptical about the extent to which one could connect online. And now, my goodness, I've gone from a skeptic to now I'm proselytizing at all of the premium Hindu studies online venues. But no, it really is staggering. It's staggering the level of connection, conversation, and transformation that can be facilitated online. So I'm glad that you discovered that, and clearly it's worked to your advantage. Who is this Krishnachandra Bhattacharya? Who is this figure?
Good question. So Krishnachandra Bhattacharya is born in 1875 and he died in 1949. So end of the 20th century, end of the 19th century, beginning first half of the 20th century. From a family, rather traditional family of Sanskrit scholars in West Bengal, so in India, of course. And he taught all his life in colleges and universities. And this is important because it means this is Indian academic philosophy. And we wanted to, with this volume and in general, you know, research, both Daniel and I, we wanted to give voice, and of course the contributors of the volumes are all part of this endeavor, to give voice to academic Anglophone Indian philosophy. So that means beyond the well-known figures and the public intellectuals and the world reformers that are Gandhi, Vivekananda, Tagore, Aurobindo. So we wanted to bring light to those working in the universities. And the second thing that is important is that he's part of the 20th century, the first half, which means was working in India during the British time, during colonization. And this is important to understand both his concept of Swaraj and ideas of self-rule and his idea of cultural subjection, but also the way he writes philosophy, bringing Advaita Vedanta in particular to respond to Kant in a particular way which can be confronted, which can sometimes want to bring to light the superiority or the positivity or the advantage of classical Indian philosophy. So this is to be understood in the context of colonization.
You know, you've touched on probably much related to this next question, but maybe we could underscore it a tad more. So why is he an important figure?
Yeah, and the second part of my response should be as on his writing, of course. He's an important figure. We call it making of contemporary Indian philosophy. He's one of the founder for us intellectually, philosophically, of contemporary Indian philosophy. For several aspects, one of which is very important is his language, that is writing Indian philosophy in English, in modern idiom, and writing about also. So parts of his writings are writings on Advaita Vedanta, Samkhya, Yoga, Jaina philosophy, that is on classical Indian philosophy, but as constructive commentaries. So he's very much against an Indology of his time, that is interpretation only of classical Indian philosophy. So his way of philosophizing classical Indian philosophy is, as you say, constructive commentary, as a sympathetic interpreter. And this means that his language is also very interesting, actually. Kesavi's language, Krishnachandra Bhattacharya's language, is often an English behind which, or mixed with it, hidden Sanskrit concept in particular. And so it's a philosophical language that is very rich, but also sometimes unorthodox for modern Anglophone readers. And this is, I think, a characteristic of contemporary Indian philosophy, that is the freedom to explore classical texts and the freedom to express ideas in English with classical concepts in the mind. At the same time, of course, contemporary Indian philosophy is always a dialogue with also contemporary modern Western material. So Krishnachandra Bhattacharya engages Kant in particular, but also Hegel. So he is a contemporary Indian philosopher in this hybridity, if you want, in the mixity, but in the freedom also to navigate between traditions. That is definitely typical of contemporary Indian philosophy. And with that, he writes also his own philosophy. He's neither only classical Indian philosopher nor a copy of a Western philosopher, but he's, of course, of his own, a creative thinker. And this you see in particular in his studies, like the subject of freedom, or the concept of the absolute and its alternative forms, that are text where it does not refer directly necessarily to one or the other, but of course his thought is informed by classical Indian philosophy, Western Indian philosophy, and also responses to Western readings of Indian philosophy. So a very complex situations of multiple voices that are typical of this period.
So the that last idea about this being typical of his period, could you say a bit about the extent to which he was unique in this dovetailing or this integration or this bridging, or whether this was there were a number of such Indian academics engaged in this enterprise? And you know, is this novel? Was what he's doing novel in his milieu?
It is novel because he's quite early. I mean, there have been. He has influenced whole generations of philosophers after him. That is also why I think he's one of the founders of contemporary Indian philosophy, like his son, Kailas Bhattacharya, Indira Banerjee, Dayakrishna. So he's opening up a generation of philosophers after him. And his novel, I think, in his, to the extent to which he builds a system that is neither classical Indian philosophy pure nor contemporary Western philosophy pure. So the language that he uses is very much still Sanskritized. The concepts that are behind his English are very much Sanskritized, yet it is a modern formulation that is not necessarily orthodox, that brings novelty into this text. And further than that, of course, he develops his own ideas. So in that, he's the founder of something that will characterize contemporary Indian philosophy. And one more thing, there is another text which is quite different from this studies in philosophy that I mentioned already, called Swarajan Ideas, which was a lecture he delivered at the college, where he's basically, he's using the term Swaraj in reference to Gandhi, but he's denouncing cultural subjection, as he says. So it is a strong lecture with strong words. He speaks of slavery of the spirit to explain what does colonization to our minds. So it's a very political text that was said in the context of colonization. And it's a question of identity, of authenticity, of how to do Indian philosophy in English. He said at one point that if he were asked to do this lecture in Bengali on that day, he's not sure he would be able to do it. So it is really the question of what colonization does to the mind and to the language. And of course, to an extent, this text is dated. There are critics in the volumes also, critical engagement. But it is a very important, I think, early instance of what we could call decolonial aspect, or the very early instance of reflecting about what colonization does to our mind, to the inner spirit.
What sorts of subfields, disciplines might this book implicate? Who might most be interested in his work?
So what I like about the book, and the beauty of the book, is I think that it's extremely diverse. I mean, everybody is, of course, engaged in Krishna Shanga but a child. But the engagement really addresses all, I want to say, but let's say most of the aspects of Krishna Chandra Bhattacharya's philosophy. So you will have, I hope, people interested in specific classical Indian texts, Samkhya and Yoga, who want to have a look or learn about some contemporary views or interpretation on that. So we have articles by Timothy Shevchenko and Daniel Rave, who are like in-depth analysis of Krishna Chandra Bhattacharya's view on these schools. You would have, I hope, philosophers who are interested in, you know, going beyond their usual Western mainstream philosophy, and maybe phenomenologists in particular, or people who are interested in the interpretation of Kant and post-Kant in the global context, who would be interested in, you know, considering that Indian philosophy is not only classical, but that it didn't stop and it's very much alive. And this is an example of contemporary Indian philosophy in the 20th century, which ought to be integrated to the global corpus, the global idea of philosophy. And maybe in India in particular, where I work, I think Krishna Chandra Bhattacharya is known, but he's also a very difficult philosopher, and there is not so much, or not enough, at least secondary literature and hype. So I hope that this volume could be a guide or help or an invitation to read with Krishna Chandra Bhattacharya further in classes, and to discover, besides Gandhi, Tagore, and the figures that are very well known here, academic Indian philosophy. So I think, I mean, anybody who thinks that it's a little strange to consider that Indian philosophy is only classical and does not exist in the 20th century should be interested in the volume. But I think the subfields will be mostly people working in global studies, global philosophy, Indology, Indian studies, who have an interest in philosophy and want to go beyond their usual classical conception of Indian philosophy.
What do you find? And I imagine there might be a number of things, but what do you find most remarkable about this figure, whether his life, his times, his journey, his thoughts? Like, what do you find most captivating and remarkable about him?
His language for me, but this is a very personal answer. I mean, the volume.
It's all right. It's you whom I'm asking. So we're good.
Yeah. So the volume might suggest very different responses, but for me, I'm always struck by Krishna Chandra Bhattacharya's language, because it's extremely difficult and terse. So you stop on each sentence to try to understand, and then I always feel there is more to it than what I understand at the moment. So I try to look if there is not a hidden Sanskrit concept, or at least hidden for me, of course, which would be read by his contemporaries. But if there is a hidden concept or hidden reference to Kant, why he's using this term, what it means. And often I discover that it's a mix and it's a very rich vocabulary that is informed indeed by different languages, but also different texts, different use of the words, and that he's kind of fusing in one concept, and this concept becomes very powerful. So for me, I think the density of the language and the richness of his language is something I don't think I have seen anywhere else.
Would you consider his enterprise a syncretic one?
I mean, yes, it depends on the studies. It's a difficult question. It depends on the studies in philosophy. In the subject of freedom, he's still exploring philosophy from the standpoint of Advaita Vedanta, his own standpoint, but he's expanding further in a different vocabulary, in a different language, and with a different horizon. So in that sense, yes, but not necessarily everywhere.
Who would you say he's writing for? Who is his philosophy for? In his mind,
good question. In his mind.
Well, you don't have to be a clairvoyant, but you know, do you have a sense of who his audience may have been?
His audience, I think, was rather restricted. I don't think he was aiming, like Radhakrishnan, at a global international scene. I think he was content writing and thinking about the absolute. And if you read the introduction, his son, Gopinath Bhattacharya, says that his lectures were different from the way he's writing. So he seems to be writing in this very dense style, but be more, how to say, use more words, maybe less dense in the college. So although he was teaching and he had students, I'm not sure his writings were indeed aimed at a very large audience, and some of them were not even published during his lifetime, but they were included in the studies in philosophy by his son. So yeah, I don't think he wanted to be on the forefront of the philosophical global scene, for example.
Clearly, else he took the wrong approach. Writing erudite, opaque, technical works. He needed a marketing coach, if so.
This was not the time. Thank God for him.
There are a number of contributions, rich and very varied contributions, 12 of them, I believe, in the work. For those listening, which range from his work in its relation to Shankara, to rasa theory, to notions of embodiment and liberation. And so, you know, the link, of course, as always, is in the podcast notes. You can feel free to click on it and have a look and see if some of the chapters are relevant to your interests and or research. Was there anything else about the volume or about this figure that you hope we touch on today?
Well, maybe just to add that some of the contributions, of course, engage critically and further. That's the case of Muspanjal, for example, who engages Krishnachandra Bhattacharya vis-a-vis the problem of past. And some of them, of course, put Krishnachandra Bhattacharya in dialogue with either the predecessors like Abhinavagupta, or with their successors like Dayakrishna. So there are different zooms, if you want, or lenses in the volume. Some of them are really in-depth analysis, and you could say almost commentaries of Krishna Chandra Bhattacharya's work, one work or several works. Some engage more largely with his philosophy, critically, and some connecting further in dialogue. So we have a diversity of topics, and that's what we wanted to have. We didn't want to present Krishna Chandra Bhattacharya as he's often presented, that is only as a Advaita Vedanta versus Kant reader and interpreter. So we have analysis on Gishan, on Samkhya, or Yoga, as I was saying, on Rasa. But we also wanted different voices and different approaches. And that's why we have very different ways of engaging critically or more closely or more generally with these philosophies and philosophical texts. Maybe that's what I wanted to add.
Excellent. Well, thank you very much for appearing on the podcast today.
Thank you so much.
For those listening, we, of course, have been speaking with Dr. Elise Kokro-Sala. She's a co-editor of a brand new book from the Rutledge Hindu Studies series called The Making of Contemporary Indian Philosophy. Of course, it's about this figure, Krishna Chandra Bhattacharya. Until next time, keep well, keep listening, keep reading, and keep contemplating potentially influential figures of history, however well or little known. Take care.